Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Simon Tierney joins us once again for a subject that I would have thought that bottled water was invented sort of 10 years ago. As, you know, it was just totally a fashion thing. But people have been drinking bottled water for hundreds of years, literally.
Well, we have, with breaks in between. It begs the question, why do we need bottled water? That's the essential question when you're looking at the history of it. You know, it's the advertising of bottled water, it's a great lesson in telling people what they want rather than what they necessarily need. Like, I'm struck, I was thinking, you know, the earliest bottled water in terms of an Irish product is Ballygowan, which is about 1981.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested to know, before 1981 in Ireland, and perhaps some of our listeners might be able to tell us, Sean, if you were driving along the road and you went to a petrol station and you were thirsty, could you buy a bottle of water in a petrol station in Ireland before 1981? Because my understanding is that the only bottled water in this country before that date was in high-end restaurants. And that was the case much across the globe. You'd be talking about buying a bottle of Perrier or something like that, which was associated with that sort of the status of having a bottle of water, you know, in high-end dining. But in terms of, as you say, Sean, you're absolutely right. It goes back hundreds of years. It started with a man whose name will be very familiar to you, especially if you drink gin and tonic, and that is Johann Jakob Schweppes. Schweppes. He mass produced the world's first bottle of water, and that was in 1792. He started off in Switzerland, but he mass manufactured it in London from that date. Interestingly, he was borrowing from the chemistry of Joseph Priestley, who of course was the first to introduce carbon dioxide into water, thereby making it fizzy. And Schweppes developed on this idea, and he served his water in conical shaped bottles, or a torpedo shape, Sean. The reason for this was because when you bottled sparkling water at that time, and indeed right into the 19th century, it was actually very difficult to retain the sparkling quality of the water without it going flat. So Schweppes overcame this challenge by developing this torpedo-shaped bottle so that no matter what you did, you couldn't sit this bottle down on a flat surface. It would fall over and it just wanted to be on its side.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because when it was on its side, the moisture from the water caused a seal in the cork at the top and prevented the carbon dioxide from leaving the bottle. He produced three different strengths of sparkling water. The first was for the dinner table to relieve biliousness. So that was to aid with digestion, and all the way down to the third, the strongest one was to help pass kidney stones. And this gives us an insight into.
So it was initially it was a medical application of sort.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, right up until the 1970s, if you wanted to buy a bottle of water, most of the time, the only place to get it was either in a high-end, expensive restaurant or in a pharmacy, because bottled water was considered mineral water. You'll still hear that expression a lot, mineral water, because the idea is that particularly with brands like Evian from Evian Les Bains in France, the idea is that the water has trickled over different minerals such as manganese, calcium, all the rest, and that the water is enriched with these sort of qualities. So it was very much the early history of bottled water. It's very much jumping on the bandwagon of the idea of taking the waters that rich people in the UK might travel to Bath, for example, to take the waters to relieve them of various conditions. Of course, water can only do one thing, and that's hydrate. But it was sold and continues to be sold on the promise that it is going to do all sorts of interesting things for you.
And were they, in those days, and presumably this is kind of a high-end item, were these torpedo-shaped bottles of fizzy water, were they expensive?
They were, in 1792, they were the equivalent of about £20 sterling today.
Crikey.
Which is very expensive. And it was only for about 750 millilitres, not even a full litre. The journey then moves to Ireland, Sean. Augustine Thwaites, that wonderful name.
Yeah.
A company that existed for a long time and is now incorporated. But he was the first to patent the name soda water. Of course, in American popular culture, soda is what they will call any sort of fizzy drink like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever. But that originates in Ireland. And the reason for that is because Augustine Thwaites, he introduced, what shall we call it, sodium carbonate into his fizzy water. And this helped balance the pH and the taste levels, but it also encouraged the absorption of CO2 in his bottled water, meaning that his product was especially fizzy. And he was the first to patent that term, soda water. So highly influential is Ireland on this incredible journey.
I did not know that. And the way the soda water then was marketed, was it, again, was this had some sort of medical benefits?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. It was Trinity College medical faculty, in fact, who were particularly enamoured with Thwaites's product. Eventually, it became more available to high society and it became associated with status and that kind of thing. Now, everything changes. The reason I said at the top of the item, Sean, is that it's not a continuous history necessarily, is because in the very early 20th century, we see a landmark sort of sanitation revolution in the introduction of chlorine into the water supply. Now, this was invented by a man by the name of Alexander Cruikshank Houston, and there was an epidemic of typhoid in Lincoln, in England, in 1905, and he experimented with the introduction of chlorine, and chlorination from that point became standardised very, very quickly all over the world in public water supplies. When that happened, of course, the idea of having to buy water in order to save yourself from getting the plague or whatever wasn't a necessity anymore, because why would you bother when the water was safe to drink?
Yeah, indeed. So then under what circumstances then did bottled water start to come back?
Yeah, so everything changes in the 1970s, Sean, and I even remember this when I was a kid. Perrier was a very big brand. It's obviously still a brand to this day, the iconic green bottle, glass bottle. But they hired an advertising executive from Levi Strauss, the big denim company, and they overhauled their marketing to target the American population with the idea that they were selling something very exclusive, very French, which was sort of associated with, you know, haute cuisine and the like. So if you wanted to display your status in the late 1970s, you had to buy a bottle of Perrier sparkling water. They also employed one of the most famous actors of the day to voice their new advertisement, which, of course, was Orson Welles. And I think we have a clip of that.
Deep below the plains of southern France, in a mysterious process begun millions of years ago, nature herself adds life to the icy waters of a single spring, Perrier. Its natural sparkle is more delicate than any made by man, and therefore more quenching, more refreshing, and the mixer par excellence, naturally sparkling from the center of the earth, Perrier.
Ooh.
Even the way he pronounces it. Perrier.
So, but he claims it comes out of the earth sparkling.
That's
not true.
No, it's not. you can tell from the things that he's highlighting in the ad, it's all about status, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, to demonstrate how effective this Orson Welles advertising campaign was, let me give you a few facts and figures. In 1975, before this ad came out, Perrier sold 3 million bottles in America. 4 years later, in 1979, they sold 200 million bottles. Oh. It's an extraordinary increase. Now, it's not just this the Orson Welles effect. There's something else really important happening here in the bottled water market in the late 70s, Sean, and it's this. We've talked about the supermarket in this slot quite a while ago, but when the supermarkets first opened, obviously they proliferated in the 60s and 70s, suddenly there's space for a much wider range of products. And in the late 70s, we see the transfer of the bottle of water from pharmacy to supermarket. And suddenly it becomes a more normalized thing for people to buy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really important shift. Ireland, as I said at the beginning, we jumped on the bandwagon in 1981. Jeff Reid started Ballygowan Water, both still and sparkling water. It's interesting, it featured, Jeff Reid did an interview with Gay Byrne in 1984.
Funny, people are texting in about that.
Are they?
They can remember him being on the Late Late Show and people laughing at him. Gay did his best poor fecker expression. Oh, how we laughed.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It was just, that's why I wanted to see if any of the listeners knew what you did if you stopped at a petrol station before the mid-80s and wanted a bottle of water. What did you do before Ballygowan came?
Yeah.
I really want to know.
Yeah, I think probably you got a can of Coke or something. Probably.
Yeah, I guess. Like, or that. You just remember to bring your own bottle of water with you in the car.
Yeah. So Ballygowan, he goes on the Late Late. You'd think that would be a career ender because everybody laughs at him, but obviously not.
No, absolutely. It goes from success to success. Particularly, things really heat up in 1987, Sean, with the introduction of Tipperary Water. This company, of course, is still going. The RTE archive has a wonderful clip of their water diviner. Water diviners were a big business in Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my grandfather talking about water diviners, Tom Young. He did an interview with RTE Television in 1987 talking about how he found the source of the stream which delivered all that water into Tipperary water bottles. But suddenly you had an explosion in the bottled water market in Ireland in 1987 with these two companies competing against each other.
Wow, that's extraordinary. The Evian, spelt backwards, is naive, says the texter. Hugh says, pre-1981, going to a garage was for a can of Coke or Fanta, and it was a treat. No need to buy water, sure, we had that at home. No obesity issues back then. Says Hughes in West Cork. In Bolton Glass, we had Perrier from early 70s on the shelves of both large shops. And in around 1988, our teacher told us that he spotted JR on Dallas pouring a bottle of Ballygowan into his drink. That probably didn't do him any harm either, come to think of it. The water cooler then, that's a very American thing, even though we have them here.
It is, yeah. We have one out on the floor there in here in News Talk, and most offices, I imagine, have them around the country. But it started in, the first electric water cooler was in 1938. But before that, you did have water coolers. They had large blocks of ice either hugging them or in the middle of them. They were large, cumbersome, made of glass, very heavy. The point of them, the reason they were invented, was the idea that if you contain and seal water, then the chances of it becoming infected with typhoid or other things is less likely. And they were initially positioned in schools in the United States as a way to keep children healthy.
Mm, very interesting. Right, fascinating as ever, Simon. The Greens are up to 10 seats now. So that was something that Eamon Ryan, hope he was aiming for at the very least. So they have achieved that, but there'll be more developments to come, no doubt. Right, we're going to take a break after that. Speaking about racism at dinner parties.